Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel this morning. Very nice to have you with us for this Friday, the 21st of August. And I don't want to talk about the obvious, but it just where did August go? Where did the summer go? I don't know. Anyway, so it's the 21st, and we get ready for a weekend, but it seems like it'll be cooler, and the weather will be beautiful, and we'll be able to celebrate what's left of summer. Does that sound like a plan?
Okay,
great. Let me introduce everybody on the panel, and then we'll get to it. We have some very interesting issues to discuss, and we welcome, as we always do, your participation. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning from New York. It's going to be great fun to see whether all of the equipment works.
It's been a mad rush this morning to get all this stuff working, so I'm sure it will. And we have a pit crew. They're ready. Go in, get it done, move away.
Move the tire. Change the tire.
Change the tire is absolutely right. Fill it up with gas, get it ready to go. Our very own Rosemary Mayo is here, Albany journalist. I realized that I had
very
put
own.
SUNY
you
Albany.
You don't own me.
Yeah. Well, we feel. Aww. Don't own you, but you feel like you're one of our own.
Okay. Yeah, and the great thing would be if we could turn on her microphone.
No, it's on.
Oh, is it? Oh, good.
Can you not hear me?
No.
Alan. Oh, wow. I can say anything I want.
No, you feel like you're, the family. You're one of our own.
Okay.
That's how I meant that.
Not like, oh, you're the boss of me.
No.
Okay, good. All right.
Oh, no. No, who's the boss of you? Nobody's the boss of me.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. I didn't. Okay.
Anybody who tries that is going to be very sorry.
And we have a newbie on the program. We're more than a little excited about this. Gretchen Holberger-Zina, who is an author. You, of course, know her on WAMC as our former host of The Book Show. She has this really cool gig, Dean of the Commonwealth Honors College at the University of Massachusetts. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome Gretchen to the panel this morning. Hello.
Hello, it's good to be back here. It's strange to be in a different role, though.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here, and we're very excited to have you here, and thank you very much. I know it was a schlep getting in here, and I thank you very much for doing that.
No, it's great to be back.
Well, thank you. Again, roundtable at WAMC.org to join us, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we will get to the items of the day. I have to say that yesterday the story that affected me the most and the one that I thought was beautiful and yet very sad, and that was Jimmy Carter talking at 10 o'clock yesterday morning from the Carter Center in Atlanta in very upbeat but very honest terms about his cancer that has apparently moved from his liver to his they have found spots on his brain, and he is receiving not only some experimental medications but also radiation, which started yesterday, and in typical Jimmy Carter fashion said, well, I may not be able to go to Nepal to build a house in November, but I hope I will be able to.
Like, Habitat for Humanity is one of his big causes, yeah.
Really sad, obviously, but a beautiful moment, I thought.
He is a graceful, intelligent, charming man, and stood out, I think, in great contrast to some of the candidates we've been listening to seeking the position he once held. The contrast between him and Donald Trump, for example, or Ted Cruz is crushing.
The thing about what happened yesterday was that Jimmy Carter, everyone used to say he'll always make a better ex-president than a president.
Right.
And he's been so inspiring in his post-presidential career. But what really struck me yesterday was the man's 90 years old. This is not a new idea that this could be near the end, or it could not be. He said, we'll see. But that he has a faith that really sustains him in a way that you don't see in other people. It gives him a sort of peace with whatever comes next in his mm-hmm. life. And I found that really moving and very mm-hmm. impressive and very calming, I think, for those listening to him.
And that very understanding feeling of that while he made it very well known that while he was handling this okay,
His wife was not.
Yes, yeah. And that was a very real moment. Alan, how did you take it?
I thought Gretchen just nailed it just now. I felt calmed by the guy. And, you know, for everybody, because, you know, Freud was right. He said the great contest in life was between, you know, life, Eros and Thanatos, and fear of death. And I thought the way he looked death in the eye and said, you know, I'm ready for it and I understand it. I just thought I took a lot away from that. I thought he was great.
My favorite moment was actually a comedic moment when they asked him basically about regrets he had. He said, I wish I had sent in one more helicopter. We would have freed the hostages during the Iran crisis, and I would have been elected for 4 more years. So it kind of shows he's still thinking about that. And, yeah, maybe one more helicopter would have done it.
Are you sure he was kidding? Are you sure he was kidding?
He did smile and laugh, but that's a point.
It was, he says that after the initial diagnosis that I thought I had a few weeks left to live, but I was unsurprisingly at ease much more than my wife was, as he mentioned. And they have said that while he will cut back his schedule a little bit, he's still going to be quite busy over the next couple of months, obviously depending on how the...
He plainly wants to go out still working.
Yeah. But
it's interesting that everybody in his family, or not everybody, but most who have died from cancer, died of pancreatic cancer, which, of course, is this great killer. And they checked him out for that. And while the cancer has metastasized, it hasn't metastasized to the pancreas, to the brain. And the other thing that I was really struck by, I wonder how you guys felt about this, is that the treatment that he's going to be getting is really incredible. They're going to be targeting those tumors in the brain, and they're going to be doing all this stuff. I just think that this is the sort of the medicine of the future, and that I just hope everybody will be getting the same kind of treatment.
Well, he has a willingness to try something new at this point. It wasn't so much that he had a fear of death, but that he was very open to whatever new kinds of ideas might come along that would help him.
Yeah.
Also, we should note that while he is in Atlanta, but Emory is a top-notch cancer center, and so and as a former president, you get
He does.
You get
not
pretty
get
good
the,
treatment.
He does not get the same care some of the rest of us do.
Right.
Come on.
Which makes sense, you know? Right.
In a capitalistic terms, yes.
I love you, Rosemary. when you look at the, and then I was just, the other thing was that he said, you know, you can't really ask for more than a wife. Like, I've been president of the United States.
Yes.
I've done all of these things. I have accomplished
thousands
this with the
friends.
Senate. Thousands of friends. I have a beautiful family. I have as you mentioned, I have a deep faith. I have a God that I pray to whose hands this is now in. And I'm good.
It's as good as it gets.
Yeah. Yep.
And married 69 years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, well, that could be good or bad.
And I believe Rosalind is 3 years,
younger.
Years junior, I believe.
Yeah, she's going to be 88 this year. Also,
And Wayne says, the first president I ever voted for, humanity and grace defined. That's from Wayne.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue on other topics, and we'll find out what else is going on in the news and what's on your mind. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York. Offering custom framing and local art in the Capital Region, open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. Shadowland Theater, Ellenville, presenting Woody Guthrie's American Song, a musical that celebrates the folk singer through his words and music, Thursday through Sundays, through August 30th, shadowlandtheater.org. And Berkshire Medical Center's Joint Replacement Program, private rooms, pre-surgical education and rehabilitation, program coordinator, and 10 orthopedic surgeons, 413-395-7680.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Gretchen Holmberg-Gerzina, and Rosemary Armeo, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at wamc.org, roundtable at wamc.org. While we are talking about the issue of cancer, we will mention the story that is a headline across the nation this morning. As many as 60,000 American women each year are told they have a very early stage of breast cancer, stage, is it O or zero?
Zero.
Oh. Zero?
I think it's zero.
As it is commonly known, a possible precursor to what could be a deadly tumor, and almost every one of the women has either a lumpectomy or a mastectomy, and often a double mastectomy, removing a healthy breast as well. Yet it now appears the treatment may make no difference in their outcomes. Patients with this condition had close to the same likelihood of dying of breast cancer as women in the general population, and the few who died did so despite treatment, not for the lack of it, according to researchers in this report. And their conclusions were based on the most extensive collection of data ever analyzed on the condition known as ductal carcinoma. 100,000 women followed for 20 years. So a lot of the studies we've been talking about this morning, or excuse me, this week, Rosemary, didn't have that kind of...
Right, that background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you make of the story?
I would hate to be in the position of someone who had had this operation or gone through all that and now be reading this study. And it came home to me because one of my sisters had cancer, a different form than breast cancer, and underwent this really aggressive chemotherapy after. And she's fine now. But the new studies on her cancer show she didn't really need that. And she's kind of upset about it, except you make the best decision you can with the best available information at the time. And that's all you can do. And I hope that's a solace to some women. The other thing, and Alan, I want to hear you talk about this. One of the implications of the study is that maybe doctors should not even tell women they have this form, if it's like a pre-breast cancer
that
form.
That is the
Just
stupidest.
Like, wasn't that bizarre? Wouldn't you want to know?
That is the dumbest thing I have ever heard.
Don't worry. There are pretty little heads about this. Don't tell them they have this ductal cancer. Yeah.
Or anyone, you know, somebody goes to my wife and says, by the way, we don't want to tell him because we know he's, he's paranoid.
Hypochondriac is the word.
Right. But he's going to die. I would want to know about that. I would want to know about it. And to be able to do anything I could in order to, you know, to deal with it. You know, that's why I do Medical Mondays so that I'm up on the latest information to know what I can do. That's a joke. So
in this article, it says such questions are unlikely to be resolved by the new study. Some doctors, including the chief breast cancer surgeon at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, said they did not see reason to change the current approach.
It's the difference. We've talked about this before, of studies that are done based on statistics versus studies done on individual cases. And statistically, for example, don't get a mammogram. It isn't going to do you any good. But if you have a history of breast cancer, if you're in your family, if your mother or your aunts have died of it, get it. You need it. It's for your peace of mind. It's to alert you. You can't base your individual medical behavior on these kinds of studies.
I was struck by what one of the doctors said, the chief medical officer at the American Cancer Society, who said, in medicine, we have a tendency to get too enthusiastic about a technique and then overuse it.
Ah.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting.
That's interesting, like Ritalin or something for hyperactivity. Oh, that's a new thing here. Take this drug.
It almost becomes a trend.
Yeah.
Instead of science, medicine.
Well, as I said on the program yesterday, I think that what's coming next, or maybe it was the day before, is it's all going to be gene splicing and gene therapy. And we are going to look back on what we've been doing now, which we have no choice about. We got to do, as you guys have just said, we got to do with the current information what we can. But you know, I think a good deal of when we have, what is it, the BRT gene, which predicts breast cancer, we're going to be able to deal with that. And we're going to look back on this and we're going to say, you know, boy, we were really something back then.
Right.
It's true, but if you're someone who is experiencing that now, knowing that we're on the cusp of finding a way to deal with it, how frustrating and how sad that is for them.
Because you want to know everything.
Yeah, well, and you want to be able to benefit from it,
right.
too.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. When we come back, we'll hear from some of you and hear your letters, and then we'll go on to the many other topics we have to discuss this morning. Gretchen Holbrook, Azina is here, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok. I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be back after this short break. Nice music to get us back into the segment this morning.
I thought you were going to say the swing of things.
Yes, very good stuff. Yeah. Rob Chacon on the board, our new board op.
Hello.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. Rob's been with us for a long time, but he's doing this, so that's very nice to have him with us. Let's go to some letters. We have many on the topics that we've discussed so far, and then we'll move on to other stuff. So we go to Alan.
Okay. We heard from Maggie, who said, "This study reminds me of what a specialist told my husband and I when dealing with our child's medical diagnosis. Medicine is an art, not a science." And then we heard from Rachel, who said, "Dear Roundtable, if you discover you have a precancerous growth, you can do lots to prevent the growth from becoming cancerous through vegan, raw juice diets. I know the people who have these diets can also get cancer, but I believe it can really help." And then Michael said, "Hi, gang. Rosemary thinks we should base medicine not on statistics, but rather on individual cases." I don't know that that's what you said, Rosemary.
No,
you
it
said,
isn't, but that's all right.
It isn't what you said. Okay. "She must apply this to public policy based on her TSA and IRS comments, too. So reasonable in her approach." Okay.
TSA still sucks, but that's not what I said.
It isn't what you said. You wanted to make the distinction between when it's happening to you and when it's statistical.
Yeah, there are two different kinds of reports, and this is a statistical report based on averages, not on people. So
okay, and then Eric said, "What did Eric say?" He said something. I can tell you that, but what he said is another whole story. Eric said, "Similar to the thought that men shouldn't get PSA tests because they too often result in unnecessary treatments. I want the info. I want to make a decision on what to do about based on the latest knowledge." And that's from Eric. And I certainly agree with
him.
And then what else is here? Jimmy, Marguerite, we already read hers. Jay said, "While one hopes for the best health-wise, let's not lose sight of Jimmy Carter's dark legacy. He proved remarkably generous at providing financial, military, diplomatic, and ideological support for fascist dictatorships that tortured and killed millions of members of their domestic populations in an effort to crush popular movements for social justice. Some of the regimes he backed carried out mass slaughter that amounted to genocide." And David Kay says,
Is that true?
I don't know who he's talking about. Jimmy Carter actually moved human rights into the realm of public policy that we discussed and part of foreign policy.
I think that's right. However, the United States has always had relationships with people like the Saudis and others.
Sure enough.
Who have, in fact, been anything but democratic in their approaches. So I think your point, Joe, just now is a very good one, which is you got to compare the Jimmy Carters with the Ronald Reagans and with some of the other people, you know, who at any cost you do. But I think it's an unfair shot, but I read them.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. David says, "Hi, Roundtable. One of the things we won't discuss enough, but I know you've had doctors talking about end of care. I just wanted to say I know a few hospice workers, and they find the people they work with at the end of their lives inspiring, and thanks for David." And David, you could be a writer about hospice. What a wonderful organization. Just incredible. William says, "A friend of mine told me I am not about to die. It is the vehicle I have to use that bothers me." This sounds like what President Carter is saying, and that's from William. And then we heard from Robert, who said, "Panel, please tell me what the point is of New York State spending what will certainly be tens of or maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars prosecuting Richard Sweat for escape when he already is serving a sentence of life without the possibility of parole. This could be handled administratively by the prison at little or no extra cost to the state. Really, After millions spent on officer overtime during the escape, why spend one more cent on the guy? I think Bob from Albany has a point.
But I heard
the DA yesterday saying, I'm the DA, and my job is to prosecute this, and I'm going to prosecute this. Well,
he also said he didn't think it would cost Clinton County taxpayers that much. He did not make a price, but he said it wouldn't be that much.
I see.
Well, if you didn't do it, wouldn't you say that he didn't have his day in court?
The man's in prison for
life. I know that, but I'm just asking. Wouldn't that be the...
No, Joe. We don't agree with that.
Okay, I don't. I'm just asking the question.
He could have a day in court if the warden said we're adding these charges.
My lawyer Rosemary is speaking for me when she said we don't agree with that, unless it was a royal we, which would have been an entirely.
No, I meant you and I. You and I.
Yeah.
Tag teaming again, you two.
Yeah, right. We're always together.
Do you always agree?
Almost never.
No. I was going to say, in my experience, you two never seem to be on the same page.
Okay, so then we heard, good morning. I appreciate this morning's conversation about cancer and medical health. In February of this year, my wife was diagnosed with stage 3A lung cancer. She's still only 40, and she was never a smoker. I think it behooves us to note that lung cancer is the number one cancer killer in America, accounting for more deaths each year than the next three cancers combined. The five-year survival rates for lung cancer at stage two are only 50-50, and these numbers have moved only slightly in the past 40 years. And then there was some more. But the import of the letter is that lung cancer is a very terrible cancer, which it is.
Let's get to some other issues while we have time. We'll do another one, and then we'll go to a break, and then we'll come back and finish up with a few more issues. A feistier combative Jeb Bush said Thursday that he doesn't believe the term anchor babies is offensive and blamed Democrats for perpetuating the idea that it's a loaded term. In one of the most aggressive exchanges with reporters to date, Bush dismissed suggestions that the two-word term deemed offensive by many Hispanics and denounced by Democrats is improper. Do you have a better term? You give me a better term and I'll use it, he snapped at a reporter who asked him. The former Florida governor first used the words Wednesday in a radio interview as he responded to questions about Donald Trump's use of the term. To some, it describes people who immigrate illegally into the United States and give birth here to ensure U.S. citizenship for their child. Bush told reporters after a town hall here that in the radio interview, what I said is that it's commonly referred to that. I don't use it as my own language. You want to get to the policy for a second. I think that people born in this country ought to be American citizens.
You know, this is not even a story about language. This is a story about how Republicans are trying to come out and be feistier than thou, to try to step up because they're just frightened at what happened with Trump stealing the spotlight. So someone like Jeb Bush, who has been very good about the subject of immigration, who's written about it, suddenly has to come up and say things that he may or may not believe. I'm not even sure what he really thinks about this.
It's hard to know,
isn't
it?
Well, they do have him on the record as having decried the word, those very words.
That's right.
Previously. So which is it? But, you know, which of us can't fall afoul of some of these rules? For months, I said the words Obamacare were offensive. You know, they were offensive. It was clear that these were hostile words by Republicans aimed at destroying the president and this health care program.
Obama embraced it.
Yeah, and then eventually I started saying Obamacare is the point.
Yeah, Obama embraced it himself.
Yeah, as a positive.
Okay, am I the only one who never heard the term anchor baby before this controversy?
No.
Supposedly, stories all said it's been around.
Heard it.
It definitely is pejorative. It's the idea that you get an American-born baby, and then, wow, the whole family gets to say, because you go, oh, you don't want to separate the family. It's very pejorative. Let's make no mistake about it. Of course, Trump has no problem using pejorative terms. He did trap Jeb Bush into saying it, and Jeb made a big mistake. I think that's why he was so kind of nasty to the reporters who called him on it. And the best answer came from Hillary Clinton, who said, actually, there is another term. They're called babies.
Yes.
Very effective.
You know, Rosemary, you and I probably disagree on this one. I think the American people like it every once in a while when a candidate gives it back full force to a reporter who's getting in their face. I'm not saying I endorse it, but I'm telling you now.
But when it comes to a derogatory term?
When it comes to anything, just get off my back. Don't be a creep. Go find another victim.
You're true about there's right now. There's a Florida sheriff who got asked to me seemed a perfectly legitimate, fair question from a reporter, and he unleashes on him, calling him all kinds of names, and you're just belittling him, not answering the question. Not surprisingly, that's gone viral on the internet. People do enjoy. They don't like reporters, and they like when people fight back. Jeb, however, is a professional politician. He's been a governor. He knows how to deal with the press. That was not the way to deal with the press. He was out of character. And I think it's because he knew he had been trapped. He was caught.
Gretchen? He was, but also we saw the same thing happen with Scott Walker, where he was losing in the polls. He was dropping and dropping, and then all of a sudden there's a video of him swinging back at somebody who heckles him in the audience.
Right.
So we have to see him as being strong and decisive. It's all about acting, I think. It's a way of just presenting yourself in a different way rather than the actual subject.
And we've had this discussion on this program before, but the American people hate journalists and they hate politicians. So who do you hate more?
Yeah, catfight. They just like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue. We have a few more topics to discuss, a few more letters to read, and, give you your fix before the weekend. We'll be right back after this break.
Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire Medical Center's Joint Replacement Program, private rooms, pre-surgical education and rehabilitation, program coordinator, and 10 orthopedic surgeons, 413-395-7680. The Sweater Venture, East Greenbush, New York, working with indigenous communities throughout the Andes and Himalayas using natural fibers and fair trade practices since 1979, sweaterventure.com. And Shedman Custom Woodworks, featuring a variety of size sheds, gazebos, and garages with site work, installation, and delivery in New Lebanon and Brunswick, New York, shedman.com for inventory.
Yeah, welcome back to the Colgate Hour. Bob Hope up next.
I love it.
It sounds great, doesn't it? It's wonderful. You're listening to the Roundtable panel this morning, and Alan is here, Rosemary Armeo, Gretchen Holbert-Kazina, and we're having an awful lot of fun discussing a wide range of issues, some very serious, some not as serious, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at wamc.org. Let's go on to, do you have any letters there, Alan? And then we'll go to...
I do. Very quickly, Tom says, another phrase is natural born citizen. Okay, that's another phrase, he says.
Yes.
All right. And then...
another phrase for anchor baby.
Right.
Robert is saying, my sister's going through this now also. She's receiving the best care, too.
Cancer.
But does it really make sense to spend $100,000 of treatment to extend someone's life by more than a few months? Well, when it's your life, it might.
There's the rub.
Yeah.
Janice says, more must compliment the choice of music this morning. Janice, well, you know, from this 74-year-old, I love the music. Get it?
I was about to break into song a little while
ago.
Yeah,
it's all very, very good stuff.
Yeah. And let's see. Jorley says, I've always hated the term illegal aliens and the sentences they are usually in. It makes people seem lesser, and they end up being treated as such. They are people, in capital letters, and the way they are spoken about turns me off from the GOP. And then, let's see, Jeremy says, What I find fascinating these days are the discoveries into the science of epigenetics and nutrigenomics. Epigenetic factors control the expression of genes. Epigenetic factors control the expression of genes. For example, you can have a gene for something, but if the gene is not expressed, in other words, turned on, it will be as if you don't even have that particular gene. In addition, nutrigenomics is the new science of how nutrition and mineral cofactors will literally turn will literally turn your genes on and off. Thank you, Rosemary. I appreciate that. It's not as if I'm not having a tough enough time. Okay. Reading. All right. Judy says, I love the music too. Hooray for the era of Fred and Ginger. Love it. And panel, between paparazzi and reporters, scrums and events, and how they're depicted in films, little if any depicts life from their view. That's Bonnie. Is that enough?
Let's go because we want to get to some. Only have about nine minutes. And I want to get to other topics. Real quick. President Obama's letter to Congress. In letter, Obama tells Congress that the U.S. will still press Iran in his most comprehensive effort to assure wavering Democrats. President Obama wrote in a letter to Congress that the United States would unilaterally maintain economic pressure and deploy military options if needed to deter Iranian aggression, both during and beyond the proposed nuclear accord.
Hard to believe he had to write a letter saying that. That was always the possibility. This letter is teamed with a really ugly effort you may have heard about yesterday. The AP ran a story based on leaked misinformation, it appears, saying that the Iranians would be able to investigate their own nuclear weapons plant. In other words, it would not be done. Inspections would not be done by international inspectors. It's not true. It just simply is not true. It ran under the Associated Press byline, which makes it seem legitimate, did a lot of harm to the president's initiative. You heard a bunch of conservative legislators, congressmen as well as senators, speaking out about the bill and how bad it was. Really ugly tactics being used.
Well, one of the things that surprised me, and maybe I'm just missing something, but this letter that the, 28 scientists who were all physicists working in the field who all wrote in support of Obama, four of them Nobel Prize winners, a number of them who had worked in the earliest stages of nuclear technology for weaponry, all in support of this. But that seemed to get swept under the rug, and nobody talks about the fact that the real experts out there are talking about deterrence and how important this is.
Right, that's true.
And also, Gretchen, it's a great point, and also on climate change. You know, virtually every scientist says, we're experiencing this, and yet we give tremendous amount of attention to the deniers.
Yeah, did you see that yesterday in California, they're trying to keep building housing and denying that the drought is a permanent situation that they have to deal with, and they're just saying, no, there'll be plenty of water?
I saw that. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of head in the sand.
Literally.
Yes, right. Let's move on to what probably will be our final topic this morning. And I know we've talked about this before in another context, but I think it's a really interesting debate that's going on in Times Square. Mayor de Blasio is raising the prospect of removing Times Square pedestrian plazas. They were installed in Times Square 6 years ago, replacing traffic-choked streets with beach chairs and picnic tables. The move prompted civic controversy, late-night monologue jokes, and eventually widespread praise as an influential innovation in urban design. But as the city grapples with an influx of topless tip seekers, the de Blasio administration has suggested an unexpected remedy: remove the islands altogether. Mayor Bill de Blasio said on Thursday that he would consider removing the plazas from the area in a bid to restore order to the crowded streets of the renowned Manhattan crossroads.
Alan, are you doing deep research on the desnudas?
I have to say that we're staying uptown. In my journalistic excellence, I probably ought to go down and take a fast look. Although I have to say that according to the Times, they've disappeared. Which is interesting. Only the guy, the cowboy in his underpants, are there. And that leads to a discussion as to whether or not men and women are being treated equally.
No,
you know,
they,
the court of appeal. Yeah.
They never are. They certainly are not here. It's these naked, topless women have like struck this incredible fear into the government of New York City, so that he's. I can't believe that he is suggesting as a way to deal
and
with
everybody's
this,
piling on. The governor piles on. The governor and the mayor, of course, are fighting about who should go first, naturally, in the way that they do. And I don't understand it, because I've personally never understood. I personally have never understood what's so big about somebody showing their nipples. I don't get that.
This is really interesting to me.
Why have we made this into such a bugaboo? And when it came to breastfeeding, people objected. I wrote a column in our town because some crazy lady was yelling about somebody who wasn't even covered up. We have these Puritan roots. Gretchen, I'd love to hear what you have to say about this. But
Puritans?
We have these Puritan roots which never, won't go away.
Well, you know, there's a couple interesting things about this. The first is that I don't know if you remember about a year ago when all of this stuff about the people getting tips and yelling at tourists and because they
and
weren't
slamming kids down on the pavement.
Right.
Somebody dressed as Elmo,
right?
And then the parent wouldn't give the guy $10, and then they threw the kid down. That was one issue.
So there's a whole history to this. It's not just about the women, and I don't think it was de Blasio's idea. I think it was someone in his staff and maybe in the police department who suggested, and he said he would consider it. I was on a train in England several months ago and met a young guy who's Eastern European, but he also has dual citizenship, and he's been to New York only a few times. And he was going on and on about how wonderful Times Square is and how he takes all his friends there and what a wonderful place it is. And I said, well, you know, this is not the Times Square that used to be. And it was a place of sort of a red light, dangerous district, and it really changed. He was amazed. So there's also a generational thing going on here with this, I think.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
These plazas are only about 6 years old. It's not some long tradition in New York City. But they're cool. And I even the Elmos and the naked cowboy, these have been troublesome, but it was the naked women, the topless women, that set off this frenzy.
I don't think so. I mean, this Gretchen's absolutely right. This was a front page story on the Post and the Daily News for weeks with the Elmo and the other characters. This has sort of been ongoing for a while, the problems that have been inherent in that neighborhood. I have two questions. One is I just think, given the security issues, and given, you know, that we had a plot for Times Square before, to have a congregational area there is of concern to me anyway, even though it is tightly patrolled more than, you know, probably any other spot in the city. So I've always wondered about that, of just having that. But then there's also the flip side of me that says, you know, you have all those gawkers and all the, and I say that in a loving way, but people who want to look at Times Square, who people want to take pictures, people who want to be in the, they should have a place to do it. In those parks and those islands are a way to do it.
If I heard you right, nipples are a security issue.
No, I didn't say that. How did you?
The gawkers and people congregating there, that creates a security issue, so we need to stop it.
No.
I mean, what if we did that for every square and place in
the United States?
The Alamo. People congregate there.
I am going to say two words, which is going to infuriate everybody on the panel and infuriate everybody who's listening right now. Ready? Rudy Giuliani. Now, there is a way to tell the squeegee guys that they cannot bother people.
That doesn't infuriate me. I mean, you're absolutely right. And I don't see, I'm talking about people who just want to go to that. I did not say that.
Okay, I heard you wrong then. Say what you said and explain.
Boy. No, I did not say that. What I said is there's people who come to Times Square who want to take their picture in Times Square.
Sometimes with Elmo or a topless woman.
Fine. I don't care. All I'm asking about is the overall issue of bringing a group of congregation into an area that has in the past been a terrorist threat, and be concerned about that. Is that a good idea?
like I think that I think my interpretation was still right. Yeah, that the desnudas present a security issue because people are going to come and gawk, and therefore they're a target.
If you take the nudists out of there, they're still going to be that they were there before the nudists start. Again, this is a conversation that's 6 years old.
No, it's actually as old as man and womankind.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not even talking about the nudists at this point. That's fine. And you can see that on any street in any place, and I don't care about that at all.
Well, we say to women, this is such an interesting way to start my new time on the round table to watch this.
I apologize that we're out of time, unfortunately, do you have a quick comment, Gretchen?
My comment is I love having Gretchen with us.
Absolutely.
Great. This is all your fault. You started all this.
It's all my fault. That's all my fault.
All right. We are woefully out of time. Thank everyone for being with us. We have a very musical 2 hours, so stay tuned. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.